Shadows on the wall dart and stretch so that it was impossible to work out which holes were big enough to support me. One of my feet slipped from a narrow scar, and for a moment I thought I was a goner. We weren't yet 10 meters off the ground, but that was plenty far enough to break a leg or two. I grabbed the rock like it was my best friend, cheek pressed flat against its warm touch. My heart was trying to thump its way out, and I didn't blame it. I mean, how many meters are in a mile? There was a long, long way to go. But I wasn't complaining. We were climbing. We were escaping. I pictured the black suits coming to pull me from solitary, the shock on their faces as they realized I was gone. They'd probably assume I'd been eaten by a rat, but they'd never know for sure. Not until I stormed back in with a rocket-propelled grenade and blew the bastards to pieces. I shuffled up another few meters, Simon pausing as he waited for me to catch up. I glanced down, saw that the light from his flashlight no longer reached the ledge. But there were 2 silver pennies glinting up at us that I knew belonged to Pete. I would have waved if I thought I could do it without killing myself.
"We should start roping," he said as I drew level, and I was relieved to hear that he was panting too. "High enough now to do some serious damage if we fall. I'll plug while you climb. Then when you reach the end of the rope, you plug. I'll pull loose and we'll step up. That makes sense?"
"Yes," I lied, wishing we'd gone over it on the ledge below. I figured I knew what he meant, though, and while he pushed a bone pin into his end of the tube and started hammering it into the rock, I kept on climbing. It was tricky without the light, but I took it slowly, feeling my way up the steeple and testing every nook and cranny twice, 3 times before trusting it with my full weight. After a few minutes, I felt the length of rope connecting me to Simon go taut, and I braced myself against the rock. Slipping loose the section that dangled from around my waist and pushing a pin through it. A couple of hammer blows later, and I was secured to the wall. As secured as I was ever going to be, that was. "It's in!" I yelled, looking down at Simon in his bubble of golden light. He pulled his tube free, knowing that if he fell now, my length of rope would hold him, and clambered up. His breathing was ragged when he reached me, but he was still smiling.
"Great idea for the ropes," he panted.
"Great idea for the climb," I replied. Then he was off again, overtaking me and scuttling up at speed. I made the most of my rest, relaxing my muscles and stretching my neck, hearing everything crack in protest. There was a tug on my waist as the rope reached its limit again. Then the chime of metal on metal.
"Your turn," he called down.
I rammed the hammer's hooked handle into the crevice where I'd wedged the bone pin. It was pretty tight, but after a couple of twists, the tube popped free and hung limply by my side. This was actually working. I started climbing again, buoyed up by our success. And it was only when I lifted my head to throw Simon a grin that I noticed something was wrong.
"Turn your light off," I yelled.
He looked down at me, shadow throwing his face into a frown.
"What?"
"Just do it. Turn it off. Look."
I couldn't point, but I nodded, gesturing further up the steeple. He grumbled but clicked off the flashlight, plunging the entire chasm into darkness. Well, almost the entire chasm. Maybe 10 meters or so above Simon's head, I could make out a soft glow emanating from the rock. It would have been easy to mistake it for daylight, the warm glow of a sunset, but I wasn't going to fall for that again. We were still way too deep. I carried on climbing, taking care not to make any noise. Simon obviously sensed my fear, waiting for me to reach him before speaking.
"What do you think it is?" he asked.
I shrugged, the motion knocking loose a pebble from the wall. It seemed to take a long time to hit the ledge below. The light could have been something from the prison, as we must have reached the level of the yard in general population by now. I pictured it on the other side of this slab of solid rock, the inmates running around inside like ants with no idea that we were scaling the wall, that we were gunning for freedom.
Maybe they knocked a hole in one of the chipping rooms, Simon went on. Maybe your explosion blew out the wall.
Maybe, but not likely. Whatever the light was, it didn't look strong enough to be coming from any of the rooms in Furnace, and even as I watched, it seemed to flicker like a cinema projector. Let's take it slow, I said, and keep it quiet. We did, easing up the wall together, too nervous of drawing attention to ourselves by hammering in the pins. We'd covered maybe 5 or 6 meters by the time we noticed the gap in the rock ahead. The steeple was broken. A massive chunk of it was missing. The pillar of rock rose up again above the gaping crack, but there was no way we were getting past it unless we could scale the walls inside the cave. That's where the light was coming from. And not just light, I realized, but noise. A wet snuffling that could have been a vacuum cleaner held underwater. I felt my stomach turn as I recognized the sound, but I refused to believe it. We eased up toward the split, the noise getting louder every second. The light was shaking now, trembling up and down and back and forth. I heard something tear, and the beam vanished altogether for a second before snapping back on, gold tinged with red. 3 meters. 2, 1. We were there. It sounded like there was a party going on just above our heads. Stamping feet, grunts, snaps like somebody tearing chicken wings. I looked at Simon, grateful that I couldn't see his expression of fear and wishing that he couldn't see mine. We didn't speak, just nodded, tightened our grip on the wall, and peered up over the lip of rock. The first thing I noticed was that the light came from a flashlight, being held by an arm clad in black. But the arm itself wasn't attached to anything. It was being eaten by a naked, grotesquely muscled creature that looked like it might once have been a monkey or a chimp. It was squatting on its haunches in the middle of a small cavern, too engrossed in its meal to notice us. Behind it, on the floor, was the rest of the black suit. What remained of him anyway. Even that was rapidly disappearing. 6 or 7 shadowed forms just as twisted as the first were stooped over the carcass, taking it to pieces like some living food processor. Every now and again, one would turn to the walls and growl at the constellation of stars assembled there, silver eyes blinking on and off as they watched the carnage. 20 of them, 30 maybe. Rats. A whole nest of them, smack bang between us and the way out. Retreat. It was all I could do not to let go of the wall. I sank back down, Simon still by my side. We didn't speak. We didn't dare. One word might be all it took to bring the horde down on our heads. I took another look at the steeple, which rose on upward toward the roof of the cave. It was too far away to reach. It curved around to either side of us, the rock as smooth and slippery as ice. We had a choice between charging into the nest, climbing to the ceiling, then somehow angling back around to continue our ascent, or retreating. It wasn't a choice at all. Something shrieked in the cave, halfway between a monkey's cry and the howl of a kid in pain. We slipped and scrabbled in the dark, our fingers barely able to hold us in place as we desperately searched for footholds beneath us. Only when we'd put some distance between us and the rats did Simon risk clicking on the flashlight. With its soft glow enveloping us, the descent was much easier, but we still kept our thoughts to ourselves until the ledge appeared from the black tide. As soon as we were close enough, I dropped, my legs and arms cramping the moment I struck solid ground. I cried out, slumping against the wall. Simon fell beside me, his face twisted into an expression of agony.
although whether from pain or from our failure, I wasn't sure. Moments later, I heard the scuffle of feet, and Ozzy and Pete were there, small hands on my shoulders, and their shrill questions too loud.
"Dead end?"
asked Pete.
"I knew it. I knew it was too good to be true."
"Keep it down," said Simon, sucking down air between each word. "Not a dead end. Rats."
Both the other boys swore in unison, looking up into the darkness. From here, the flashlight wasn't visible. Either that or the rat had finished its sick meal and had tossed the bones away. We sat in silence for a while, heads back and eyes on the sky for any sign of the creatures. My entire body was a wreck, my hands locked into cruel talons that wouldn't straighten out no matter how much I pressed on my fingers.
"So it's no go?"
asked Ozzy eventually. Simon shook his head, his face expressionless.
"There must have been dozens of them in there,"
he muttered.
"No wonder the black suits haven't been able to find them."
"Can't we wait for them to go, wait for a breach?" the younger kid went on. "We could tell the suits where they are. Let the guards deal with them."
"Feel free,"
Simon said. "It wouldn't do any good, I don't think," I added. "There's a massive section of the steeple missing. Even if the cave was empty, I'm not sure we could pass it."
"And we don't even know if it goes all the way to the top,"
said Pete with a weary sigh.
"Well, I guess it's back to our apartment for now."
"It would have worked,"
snapped Simon.
"It still could work. What, one little hitch and the whole thing goes up in smoke?"
He looked like he was going to say more, but the volume of his voice dropped, and all that came out was a string of muffled curses. I didn't listen. Something was nagging at the back of my mind. Something important.
"What do you think, Alex?"
asked Ozzy, but I shut him up with an impatient wave.
"Give me a minute,"
I said, scratching at my fragmented thoughts in order to try to find whatever it was that had called for my attention. Something in what Simon had just said. I almost had it, an idea flashing before my eyes so fleetingly that it was gone before I could identify it.
"You got something?"
asked Pete, and this time it was Simon who told him to be quiet, his silver eyes wide and impatient.
"I'm not sure," I said. "I thought..."
There it was again, like one of those stupid 3D pictures where you have to squint to see the pattern. It seemed to focus, then shimmered out of sight. I thumped my head in frustration, going back over what Simon had said. It still could work. What, one little hitch and the whole thing goes up in smoke?
Then it hit me. The image like a sledgehammer, impossible to miss. It exploded in my head with such force that I bit my tongue, the sting seeming to clarify the thoughts even more. The Lost Boys must have noticed something in me change as all three crowded in.
"What?"
asked Simon.
"You know what to do? How to get rid of the rats?"
"No,"
I replied through a smile. "I know how to get us out."
"What?"
he repeated, his own face opening up into a grin.
"Another way? Tell us for God's sake, or I'm going to throw you over the bloody edge."
"Going up in smoke," I said, picturing a trail of burning vapor rising up through the fractured rock, curling free from a vent on the surface. "We can get out through the incinerator." For what seemed like forever, nobody said a word. Two pairs of silver eyes and another of watery blue blinked at me as if I'd grown a 4-foot beard in the last second.
"You think the chimney goes to the surface?"
said Simon after a while. "I know it does," I replied, remembering the day I'd been taken to Furnace, the view from the bus window of the Black Fort,
shrouded in smoke that seemed to rise from the ground behind it.
It has to. Where else are they going to put it without choking everyone to death?
Yeah, makes sense, added Ozzy, his voice accelerating with excitement. I'll bet you anything they place the incinerator beneath another section of the gorge. Saves drilling down through solid rock. And it would have to go to the surface. This place must have been inspected before it was opened, and an incinerator of any kind would need proper ventilation.
You reckon this place was inspected?
Asked Pete, an eyebrow cocked.
Of course, the younger kid went on. Every new prison would be inspected to make sure it was up to scratch. Obviously, nobody's ever been back since to check, but they wouldn't have blocked off the incinerator chimney. What would be the point?
It's not like any of the inmates would ever find it,
said Pete. Not alive, anyway, Ozzy added. And even if they did, who would think to climb it?
They'd have to be crazy, I said.
The only problem is getting to it,
sighed Simon, standing up and loosening the tube tied around his waist. It crawled to the floor with a slap.
We gotta go through the infirmary.
I knew we'd have to go back into the prison, but I hadn't consciously acknowledged it until Simon had spoken. No, something in my head shouted.
You can't return. You're out now. Just stay out. You're not free, but you're not their prisoner either. You can survive out here. If you go back now, then you face the Weezers, the Black Suits, the Warden.
And whoever had been on the other end of the phone. But I had to return. I was being forced back because of what I'd done to Z. That's why we hadn't been able to make it up the steeple. That's why the rats were up there, because I wasn't allowed to leave without him. I know I was delirious, my mind so exhausted that it couldn't think straight, but right then it made a perfect kind of sense. And it was that crazy logic that gave me the strength to stand up, because I knew what I had to do.
So what are we waiting for? I asked, resting a hand on the wall until my head stopped spinning, then squeezing back through the gap.
Let's make like a tree and leaf.
Make like an atom and split, said Ozzy behind me.
Make like diarrhea and run,
came Pete's muffled voice, making us groan. Simon was the last one in, and we were halfway back to the cave before he suddenly chirped up.
I've got one. Let's make like a hockey player and get the puck out of here.
We were still laughing as we skidded down the slope that led back to the main cavern. I don't know why. I mean, we were dead on our feet, and chances were that we would be dead on our backs within the hour, murdered by the Black Suits or the rats or worse. Maybe that was why. Maybe we were trying to laugh as much as we could before we met our dismal end, because you never know which laugh is going to be your last. It faded as we reached the low ceiling, replaced by the panicked cry of a distant siren. We dropped down onto our knees to scan the cavern ahead. At first I thought it was empty, and I was about to crawl under a rock when Simon grabbed my arm.
You insane?
He whispered, using his other hand to point toward what I'd thought was a layer of darker rock against the fleshy red. Squinting into the merciless halogen beam, I saw a line of Black Suits standing motionlessly by the vault door, each holding a shotgun in one hand and a leashed dog in the other. As we watched, three more strode from inside the compound, and behind them, looking nervous, was the Warden. He barked something inaudible at the guards and gestured wildly to the various passageways that led from the giant room. Then he turned, his eyes sweeping the shadows. For a moment I thought he'd seen us because I felt cold fingers in my head, the floor and walls peeling away. Then the sensation passed. The Warden shoved one of the Black Suits, and this time when he screamed I could hear him all too well.
Find him!
My empty cell had been discovered, and now there was an army standing in our way.
Won't be long before they track us, said Simon. Dogs will pick up your scent from your cell.
So what do we do? I asked. Hide out until it blows over?
You know as well as I do this ain't never gonna blow over. That's twice now you vanished, and this time right under the warden's nose. They'll tear this place apart to find you.
So what do we do? I repeated. He looked at me, flashing a crescent of broken teeth beneath his starry eyes.
We give them something to keep them busy.
I thought I knew where this was going.
If there's a breach, then they'll be distracted. It will give us time to get in.
But the rats aren't here, I said, and we haven't got time to wait for them to get hungry. We need to go now. His grin widened.
That's why we need some bait.
Bait. We played paper, scissors, rock for it, all of us, although there was no way Pete was going to be running from the rats with those stick insect legs of his. Simon lost to him anyway, Pete's tiny hand covering about a third of his giant fist as paper beat rock. Ozzy got victory over me exactly the same way, and although he feigned disappointment, saying how he never got to be the hero, the relief coming off him was so potent I could almost see it.
Gonna whoop your ass, boy, said Simon, warming up his muscles like we were about to start a boxing match.
You're mine, I replied, flexing my aching fingers. On one. 3, 2, 1. We flicked a hand out at each other, and I squinted into the gloom to see Simon's fingers forked like scissors. They were snapping away at my paper like a piranha devouring a horse. He might as well have used them to open up my neck, because what I was about to do was suicide. Crap, I muttered.
Yeah, the kid replied. That sucks. You want me to do it?
Well,
tough. Rules is rules.
Thanks a million. We almost started laughing, but it was stifled by the proximity of the warden and his black suits. Instead, we ducked in toward each other, our whispered plans filling the pocket of rock like the hiss of a distant river.
You only have to get them as far as here, said Simon. Lead them down the slope and they'll sniff the black suits in the cavern. As soon as they're in, it will be chaos. It should give us enough time.
There was that word again. Should.
We'll hide over there, he went on,
pointing the light at a cluster of broken rocks at the bottom of the slope.
We'll be ready to pull you in as soon as you appear. With any luck, the rats won't see us, and we'll plow right through into the cavern.
And if they do see us? I asked.
Then we're screwed,
he replied matter-of-factly.
Everybody set on what they have to do?
What do you mean, everybody? I said, a tremor belying my attempt at humour. You three have just got to stay low and keep quiet.
Okay,
he corrected, handing me the flashlight.
Are you set on what you have to do?
I didn't answer. Just strapped the light to my waist, looked back up the slope and tried to swallow.
Good luck, said Simon. Remember, lead them back through here. We'll be waiting for you.
Then they were gone, drowned in darkness, as they scrabbled behind the cairn of stones. I started to climb, my heart juddering like an old engine about to stall. I was terrified already, the fear a bright white light that sat behind my eyes. I thought of the creature I'd seen in the steeple, the monkey, the ape, the kid, the way it had torn into the black suit's arm like someone eating a hot dog. My imagination swung into overdrive, and I saw the rats pinning me down, felt their teeth pierce my skin, smelled their rancid breath, and realized it was my blood that dripped from their deformed muzzles. What the hell was I doing? I forced myself to concentrate on the path ahead, navigating the cluster of narrow passageways at the top of the slope. I wondered if I should be leaving a trail of something to help
find my way back, then realized I'd be blistering down here at such an unholy pace I wouldn't have time to see the markings anyway. If I made it this far, that was. I passed through the tiny cave where the Lost Boys had been sleeping, taking the tunnel out the back and the narrow passage that split off from that. I wasn't even sure if this was the right way. The couple of times I'd been here, Simon had led, and I hadn't been paying all that much attention. Suddenly, the tunnel seemed smaller. I noticed twists and turns that weren't there before. I was lost. Then it angled down, the walls closing in, and I recognized that familiar stab of claustrophobia. The gorge was just along here. Maybe I should have made more of an effort to lose my way. I pushed through the knuckle of tight rock and found myself in the endless swamp of liquid night, the abyss stretching out beyond the narrow shelf of rock and echoing to infinity above me. I looked up, picturing the rats gnawing away on the bones of the black suit. What should I do? Shout? Whistle? Scream? Hello? I mumbled. No response. I tried again, louder this time. Hello? Rats, are you up there? It still wasn't loud enough. If the creatures hadn't heard Simon and me smashing our bone pins into the wall, then they wouldn't hear my pathetic cry. This time, when the words came, they were loud enough to carry. I'm down here! I yelled, half shout and half scream. Come and get me! I tensed my legs, ready to make a run for it. There was an insect click from the gap in the rock I'd just stepped through. I'd been counting on them coming at me down the wall. If they appeared behind me, I was dead. Today's special, a skinny kid who's about to crap his pants, I bellowed almost in tears. Get it while it's hot! Something shrieked in response, the sound dropping from above like a guillotine blade. Another noise, more shrill than the first, but just as chilling. One more, a bass growl that seemed to make the very rock shake. In a couple of seconds, the chasm was alive with a sickening chorus of grunts, screams, and wails that sounded heartbreakingly human. It reminded me of feeding time at the zoo, and I guess I wasn't far wrong. Something sparked on above me, the twin specks of light, distant but visible against the black canvas of the gorge. They blinked out, and when they lit up again, there were two more beside them, then four, then too many to count. And when they all raced toward me down the steeple, I thought for a moment that the sky was falling, the stars crashing to earth. It would have been beautiful if I didn't think it was the last thing I would ever see. I ran, the rock scraping against my chest as I pushed myself through the gap, the flashlight swinging wildly, making the tunnel come to life. It was like being in one of those funhouse crazy walks where the floor and the walls are moving and you can barely stand up. Except on this ride, if I so much as tripped, I'd be skinned alive. The screams on my tail were louder, the scrabble of their feet against rocks so much quicker than my own clumsy steps. I couldn't believe they'd sped so easily down the same near vertical slope that Simon and I had struggled so hard to climb. I burst into the little cave, the savage cries like fingers trying to hook me back. Two giant leaps and I was out again, lungs burning as I charged down the passageway beyond. There was an instant of utter panic as I reached a junction, my brain too concerned with trying to make my legs work to remember which exit to take. I know I shouldn't have, but something made me glance over my shoulder. It looked like a tidal wave of silver crashing and spitting toward me, gaining with impossible speed. My flashlight swung, and the bodies attached to those eyes caught the light, the walls and floor alive with glistening red skin moving fast, too fast. I threw myself at the middle passage, but before I reached it, something thumped into me. It was like being hit by a train, and I was on the floor before I knew what was happening, pinned down by a figure of knotted muscle. I saw a needle jaw open in the fleshy mess of its face, lunging toward my neck. I squirmed, lashed out with my hands, twisted my body and, more from luck than anything else, managed to raise my shoulder to block its attack. Its teeth sunk into the flesh of my upper arm and my skin turned to fire, but the pain seared through me like an electric charge, making my body buck. The creature lost its balance, its lopsided body toppling to the side. It grabbed at me with gnarled hands, but I kicked out, my heel connecting with its nose. I didn't stop to see what damage I'd done. The other rats were almost on me, their howls rising to a crescendo as they watched me make my escape. As the darkness of the tunnel closed in, I realized I'd lost the flashlight, but there was no going back for it. I was almost there, maybe another 10 or 15 paces before the slope that dropped down to the cavern. It was more like 5. I felt my foot plunge off the edge, my stomach flipping as I fell. It wasn't a long drop, my descent broken by the uneven slope. Before I could even pull myself to my feet, I felt hands on me, dragging me across the floor, panicked whispers in my ear. "Quick! Get him in!" It was too dark to see where I was going, but I didn't care. Blood was pouring down my arm, the wound like hot coals embedded under the skin. I stopped moving, 3 bodies pressed against mine as the screams resonated off the walls. There was a thump as something landed close to us, the menacing growl of an injured animal from the other side of the pile of broken rocks. Then the bodies began to patter on the ground like hail, a storm of claws that thrashed less than a meter from where we cowered. Someone was holding my head, pulling me close, and I took some comfort from the fact that at least I wasn't going to die on my own. There was a distant call, then a shot. 2 more, followed by choked wails. I heard the scuffle of legs as the rats charged away from us, pictured them flooding under the low ceiling into the cavern, red in tooth and claw, eyes blazing as they stampeded toward the black suits. The sound of shotgun fire was like a New Year's fireworks display. The figure holding me moved, getting to his feet and pulling me up with him.
"Good job," said Simon from the shadows. "I can't believe that worked. You okay?"
"I'm okay," I lied, tearing a strip from my overalls and attempting to tie it around the wound. The pain was spreading, making my entire arm throb. I could feel it in my neck too, and wondered if the rat had spread its disease to me, if the flesh on my face would start rotting, if I'd suddenly develop a taste for blood. Simon flinched when he saw what I was doing, then grabbed the makeshift bandage and tied it tight.
"You should go," said Ozzy, peering out from behind the cluster of stones and nodding an all clear. "The distraction won't last for long."
"You're not coming with us?" I said.
"No, I'm going to stay with Pete. Just make sure you come back for us."
"You can bet your life on it," I promised.
"That's exactly what I'm doing," he replied.
Simon was already moving, his eyes glinting as he jogged toward the low roof that separated us from the cavern. All the rats had made their way through, and by the sounds of it, they were going to work on the black suits. The shotgun blasts were growing less frequent, replaced by wet cries and snapping bones. I wasn't sure I wanted to see what was happening through there, but I didn't have a choice. We ducked down, peered under the rock. The halogen lights gave the scene the feel of a theatre performance, and I was happy to believe the illusion. Everywhere I looked, there was movement. Directly ahead, a black suit was on the floor, gun lying uselessly out of reach as the rats piled on top of him. Past that, another of the guards was firing at one of the creatures, the flash of his weapon turning the rat into sushi. The line of suits near the door was holding, the giants using the butts of their guns and their massive fists to keep the approaching horde at bay. The dogs, too, were in their element, teeth locked around throats and limbs. There was no way in hell I was running through there. I turned to Simon, but he motioned for me to be quiet, nodding out at the carnage. Sure enough, the black suits were winning, their firepower too much for the rats to withstand. The creatures, Those still alive and still with a sufficient number of limbs attached were scuttling toward the outer walls of the cave, heading for the shadows and the passageways that led from it. And the guards were following, reloading their guns as they ran, pumping shells into chambers and firing round after round at their fleeing figures. I could hear them shouting at one another, their deep voices full of what I thought was fear, but which could have just as easily been excitement or relish. Seconds later, by some miracle, the cavern was clear, except for the unrecognizable shapes that squirmed and squealed in their beds of blood. The sound of gunfire echoed through the darkened tunnels, and it wouldn't be long before the suits returned, or the rats if they somehow managed to get the upper hand. There were no goodbyes this time, no hugs and promises. Simon and I both glanced back to take a final look at Ozzy and Pete, but they had already gone. And with nothing else to keep us, we dropped under the low ceiling, clambered to our feet, and started to run. Goodbyes. It seemed like the longest distance I had ever had to cross in my life. It only took us 15 seconds to run the length of the cavern, if you can call my drunken, desperate limp a run, but it seemed like an eternity. Time ground to a halt, as if inviting me to study the writhing shapes we passed. The shredded suits, creatures turned inside out, the pitiful cries of monsters who had once been like us. A hulking shape loomed from a tunnel to my right, a black suit with a rat clamped to his shoulders like a backpack. Locked together in some horrific ballet of punches and bites, neither of them noticed us. I felt fingers on my ankle from another unrecognizable shape beneath me, but they were too weak to hold me back. There was only one time I thought we'd had it, just as we reached the damaged vault door that led back into the compound. A black suit sat against the wall, his legs shredded, shotgun resting in his lap. He raised it as he saw us approach, his expression one of surprise. Simon was on him in a flash, a blow from his giant arm sending the guard slumping to the side. Then we were in, bathed in crimson light and deafened by the siren that blasted from hidden speakers. There were two black suits in the passageway ahead, but they were running in the opposite direction. I noticed the warden between them, buffeted back to his quarters, and the trio vanished into his room without a backward glance. We sped after them, reaching the junction where I'd heard the phone, but the air was clear now, no hint of whatever it was I'd felt before. Or maybe I was just too pumped up to notice it, my body nothing more than an engine as we crashed down the corridor that led to the infirmary. I thought there might be a guard outside the door, one final obstacle between us and the incinerator, but the way ahead was clear. The plastic curtain slapped my face as we pushed through it, and I battered the slats away from my eyes to see the room ahead abandoned. No sign of the Weezers. Maybe they'd fled back to their quarters, scared into hiding by the siren, which swept around the room like a trapped wasp. I realized I was still running and forced my legs to stop and rest. Simon jogged ahead, reaching the curtain at the other side of the room and peeking through it before turning to me.
"It's clear,"
he said, as if he couldn't believe it. "I've got to find him," I stuttered back. "I'm not going without him, not now." I was expecting an argument, but Simon nodded, moving toward the right-hand line of beds still concealed behind their screens.
"You look that side. I'll check over here."
I wrenched open the first screen, not caring about noise. It was still empty. So was the one after that. I paused outside Gary's compartment, unable to bring myself to look inside. I knew we'd have to leave him, knew he deserved to be left. But if I saw him there, I didn't think I'd be able to go without him.
"Alex!"
I spun, saw Simon half inside a cubicle waving at me. I sprinted over, avoiding the trolleys that littered the aisle, and dashed through the curtains. Behind them was Z. He was strapped to the bed, but there were no marks on his skin. No IV stand by his side. Just a small face looking up at us with eyes as wide as pickled eggs.
"No way," he said. This has got to be a dream.
You okay? I asked as Simon ran back outside, returning seconds later with a scalpel. They touch you?
No,
C replied, his grin so wide it looked like it was going to stretch right off his face.
No, they stuck me with some of that black stuff, but it just knocked me out for a bit. Don't feel any different.
He tried to ease his body to one side as Simon cut through the leather straps, the blade slicing them open as if they were butter.
I knew you'd come back for me,
Z said.
I knew you wouldn't leave me.
I felt my heart twist, guilt rising up from my guts like vomit. I tried to smile at him, then looked away.
Have you seen Donovan?
I asked.
Is he still here?
I don't know, C replied, pulling his arms free from the severed straps and rubbing the ugly welts that had formed.
We can't see anything with these screens.
I think so, though. I mean, I don't know why he wouldn't be.
I'll be right back, I said, walking out into the aisle.
You can't release him,
said Simon as he continued to saw through Z's restraints.
He's too far gone.
I hung my head, thinking about the last time I'd seen Donovan in solitary confinement and what the hallucination had said to me.
You don't have to free me to save me.
I know, I said, but I was the only one who heard it. I walked down the row, three cubicles, then peered past the screen. The metal sarcophagus was still there, angled against the wall. The IV stand in place now with four bags of nightmare black hooked up to it. The tubes ran the liquid death into the arms and neck of a creature that couldn't have been Donovan, but was. He was monstrous, both in size and in appearance. All his limbs were now grotesquely deformed, the muscles like hunks of meat beneath greasy pastry. His neck was a mess of tendons as taut as steel cables, and perched on top was a shapeless face, all jaw and roughly hewn cheekbones decorated with half-healed scars. His silver eyes watched me enter with no sign of recognition, with no sign of anything human. Donovan was the only word that slipped from my lips. His mouth split open, tombstone teeth flashing in the muted light. I thought about the first time I'd seen him smile, up in our cells on the day I'd arrived at Furnace, and all the time since, a beam of sunshine that more than once was the only thing that had stopped me throwing myself off the eighth level of the prison. There was none of that warmth now, no compassion. There was nothing there but the hateful sneer of a black suit, and it broke my heart. Donovan lurched forward, the chains around his arms and legs and chest squealing as the metal struggled to constrain him. He growled, the noise like a machine lodged in his deformed throat.
It's okay, I said, unable to hold back the tears anymore. It's okay, Dee. I'm going to get you out of here.
He fought against his chains again, his solid steel casket rocking. The grin was still plastered on his face, his cold eyes promising me nothing but death if he managed to get out. I knew what I had to do. I crept past the screen into the next compartment, the bed empty and stripped except for the dirty pillow. I picked it up, held it to my chest as I blinked away the tears. Images kept flashing before me. The times I'd spent with Donovan up top in Gen Pop, the meal we'd had with Monty in the kitchen, the way he'd cried eating the steak. The look on his face when he realized escape wasn't just a dream. His excitement when we loaded the last of the gloves into the crevice in room 2, when he'd asked me if we should just go, the night before the blood watch had come and taken him. I'm sorry, Dee, I said, the words nothing more than sobs. I'm so sorry. I walked back to Donovan, barely able to see where I was going through my blurred vision. He started struggling again when he saw me, the growl growing fiercer, breaking up at the end into what sounded like a grating laugh. It was the final straw.
That thing before me wasn't Donovan, not anymore. Everything good about him had been stripped away. I pictured him as I wanted to remember him, sitting beside me on my bunk and giggling, slapping my back as his tuneful laughter filled the cell, making my spirit soar.
You don't have to free me to save me.
I know, I repeated, reaching up and pushing the pillow against his face. I was sobbing so hard I could barely hold it, his body rocking so wildly that some of the links in his chains stretched out of shape. But they held, and I pushed, howling now as I heard the muffled gasps. I pushed until I felt his body grow still, the tendons in his neck relaxing. I pushed until I felt the mouth beneath the pillow droop, one last dull groan fading into silence. And I kept pushing, because I couldn't bear to pull the pillow away to see what I'd done. "You're free," I said. I closed my eyes, saw Donovan as he had been. One last smile, then he faded. "You're free. You're free." And I kept saying it even when I felt the hands on my shoulders pulling me away. I plunged my head into Z's neck, feeling his sobs beneath my own. "You're free. You're free. You're free."
"We have to go,"
said Simon, and I let them both steer me out of the cubicle, the pillow still gripped in my hands. I didn't look back. The incinerator. We didn't run this time, even though the sounds of the black suits could be heard over the endless drone of the siren. We walked across the infirmary, somehow knowing we had enough time, that we were going to make it. Z pried the pillow from my hands as we reached the plastic curtain, laying it tenderly on the stone. I know it sounds stupid, but I didn't want to leave it. I couldn't tell you why.
"You did the right thing,"
Z said quietly, wiping the tears from his eyes. "He wouldn't want us standing around weeping. Let's get out of here, for Donovan." We pressed through the door, the plastic slats like cold fingers on my face. The corridor beyond was deserted, the surgical rooms on either side empty behind their electronic seals. Several more steps and we'd reached the incinerator. The air here was warm, and a jolt of panic ran through me as I pictured us walking in to find the furnace burning, our path out blocked by a wall of fire. But when Simon eased down the handle and opened the door, the room beyond was lit only by the cold lights in the ceiling, the incinerator grills wide open like a welcoming embrace. The bodies had gone, but there were others here now, five of them, watching us with what I could swear was envy. Simon closed the door behind us, cutting off a dog in mid-howl. The black suits were close, but they couldn't stop us. Not now.
"I hope you've got a good reason for being in here," said Z, staring into the furnace. "I don't fancy getting cozy with the dead guys again."
"It's our way out," I said. "The incinerator, the chimney, it goes all the way up." Z frowned, then his face blossomed into a smile.
"You've done it again," he said. "That's brilliant. Have we got the gear? The climbing stuff?"
"Nope,"
answered Simon, taking a step toward the furnace.
"We're gonna have to do this without help."
"Well, what are we waiting for?"
C moved in to join him as the sound of shouting rose up behind us. Simon clambered into the oven, then Z, and I followed, trying not to think about the source of the ashes that clumped around my feet, that danced in the air and collected in my mouth. It took a while for us to build the courage to look up. For all we knew, there could be a metal grate bolted into the ceiling. The chimney could be a foot wide. The walls could be as smooth as silk. But when we did tilt our heads up, our choked sigh of relief echoed back at us from the metal sides of the incinerator.
Above us, stretching into darkness, was a vertical tunnel of rough rock, maybe a meter and a half in width. And coming down it was the unmistakable scent of fresh air. We let it fall on us, closing our eyes and imagining spring rain and sea breezes. Okay, it was a mile or so above us and we had no idea if we could actually reach it, but right now that breath of cool wind was all we needed. It was part of a world we thought we'd never see again, never feel, never breathe. It was a link to the surface, the chink in furnace's armor. Bathing in that draft, we were as good as free.
"We gonna stand around all day or get the hell out of here?" asked Simon, holding out his mammoth hand.
I put my foot in it, grabbing his arm for balance as he hoisted me up to the ceiling of the incinerator. I eased myself into the chimney, running my hands across the rock until I found something I could cling on to. "Got it," I said, my voice ringing up the walls as if trying to beat me to the top. I could feel the soot and smoke of dead things against my fingers. Christ, this thing could do with a wash. My shoulder was killing me where I'd been bitten, but I ignored the pain as best I could, lifting up a leg and bracing it against the wall. The chimney was narrow enough to wedge my body in, back and feet on opposite sides, allowing me to shuffle my way up without the need for handholds every few meters. I inched up painfully slowly, but with every passing hair's breadth, I felt the tension peeling away, the stress and the panic dissolving into smoke and rising up alongside me. We were doing it. We were getting out. There was a scuffle beneath me as Z got in, moaning under his breath about how uncomfortable it was. We pushed up a bit more before Simon's tinny,
"Mind if I join you?" resonated from the stone.
"Only if you don't peek up my skirt," laughed Z. It was tough going, but every time I felt my legs cramp, I just spread them, bracing my arms on either side of the chimney and tilting my neck back to lock myself in place. With no light, I couldn't tell how far we'd climbed, but it must have been 15 meters or so. Only a few hundred left to go, I thought.
"I hope neither of you needs to take a whiz while we're in here," said Simon. "Not unless you let me overtake you first."
I tried not to laugh, knowing it would probably make me lose my grip, plummet back into the furnace. Instead, I shifted my body around, climbing in the conventional way for a while in an attempt to use some different muscles. It was as I was scanning the wall for any hint of a grip, impossible in the smothering gloom, that I noticed something up ahead. It looked like a flash of silver, so small it barely registered in my vision. I blinked the sweat from my tear-ravaged eyes, tried to focus on it. A silver penny, unblinking. It was a rat. It had to be. How the hell had it got in here? It didn't matter. Right now we were stuck in a narrow pipe with it, and there was no other way to go except down. I was about to warn the others when something in my head clicked. For a second, I didn't understand it, or maybe I just didn't believe it. But the more I stared at that pinpoint of silver, the more difficult it was to deny it. "Do you see that?" I said. "What?" asked Z. "I can't see anything. Your butt's in the way." "That," I said, gripping the wall tight so they could look up past me. "That dot."
"Dot?"
mumbled Simon from farther down.
"You going crazy?"
"No way," interrupted Z. "Is that?"
"It can't be,"
added Simon. "But it is," I said, imagining its warmth on my skin even though I knew it was impossible from this distance. "It's daylight." We were so busy cheering that none of us noticed the change in the chimney, the thickening of the air. I coughed, thinking it was just the exertion of the climb, but then Simon spluttered too, Z's whoops of delight becoming a rattle.
I opened my mouth, but no oxygen flowed in. Only an acrid cloud that lined my windpipe. I coughed again, this time convinced I'd hacked up a lung.
"Oh, no,"
said Simon. I didn't need to look down to know what he was talking about, but I did anyway. I could make out the silhouettes of the two boys beneath me, squirming against the wall as they tried to escape the growing flames. The incinerator had been lit. I tried to double my speed, tried to scramble up the rock to outrun the smoke. It was pointless. I didn't know whether the black suits had discovered our escape or whether it was just another of the cruel twists of fate that Furnace was so, so good at, but there was no way we could go on. I heard Simon coughing again, too many times for him to have been able to draw a breath. C was wheezing like one of the gas masks, his fingers grasping at my legs for support, but I had none to give. With another racking splutter, I felt my grip on the wall come loose. I tried to wedge my back against the rock, but I was spasming too much, the smoke in my lungs, in my eyes. There wasn't even enough air for me to curse the black suits, curse the warden, curse our crappy luck, curse God. The smoke was in my head now, a pungent cloud even darker and filthier than the chimney. I knew I was passing out, knew I couldn't hold on any longer. I took one last look at the speck of daylight, keeping my eyes open even though they burned. Then I was falling, thumping into Z, our tangled limbs hitting Simon, all of us plummeting toward the fire below. "At least it will be quick," was the last thing I thought. "At least we'll be free." And I wondered if Donovan would be there, wherever we were going. But we weren't that lucky. It wasn't quick. We weren't free. I don't remember hitting the inferno, the pain too much for my body to register. I could hear the shouts, though, the cries of the black suits, the shudder of the furnace as it was shut down. I could feel their hands on me, dragging me out, slapping my skin where the flames had taken root. And I could see the warden, his soulless eyes making me wish I had burned to death. My vision went before my hearing, and I could hear him laugh. Wild, lunatic cackles of delight. When they faded, his voice was just as terrifying, penetrating the darkness inside my head.
"My, my. Look what the rats dragged in. Get them into surgery. Prep the wheezers. We can still use them."
Then my hearing went too, my senses deserting me in the face of what was to come. I prayed for death, prayed to be taken away, prayed for somebody to free me the same way I had freed Donovan. But even as I felt myself being carried through the door, I knew that death wouldn't come for me here, not now. It wouldn't dare. Because the true horror of Furnace was about to begin. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Solitary by Alexander Gordon Smith. Copyright 2009 by Alexander Gordon Smith. Performed by Alex Kalazic. Directed by Buck Scherner. Performance copyright 2010 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225.